the Millions Were Made podcast. I'm your host and Forbes featured business advisor, Jessica Marks. Join me as I dive into powerful conversations with multi-million dollar founders. Together, we will uncover their secret strategies, learn from real life case studies, and gain actionable advice to skyrocket your entrepreneurial success. This podcast is for the 1% who surpassed the million dollar mark and those who are ready to join us. Let's get started. On today's episode of Millions Were Made, I could not be more excited to have Erin Holt. She's the founder and CEO of The Functional Nutritionist. She also has a top-ranking podcast, which is a weekly show dedicated to all things health and mindset. Honoring both is how she built a successful seven-figure company without selling her soul, losing her integrity, or sacrificing her health. And it is Erin's mission to help other women do the same. She has an online clinic and educational platform that specializes in intuitive functional medicine. And on today's episode, we are going to talk about how she made her first big investment and what it unlocked, how setting boundaries in her business has helped the trajectory and growth of her company as well as her personally, and everything in between. I am so excited to have Erin on the podcast today. Erin, welcome to Millions Were Made. I would love for you to share with our audience about your business, how you grew it to seven figures, and then we're going to dive right in to a list of questions that I have for you.
Awesome. I'm so excited because normally when I do podcast interviews, it's all about health and functional medicine and nutrition. And I'm like this, I love talking shop. I love talking business and entrepreneurship. So this is like the highlight of my week. I've been so excited about being here. So I'm ready for you.
I love this. And I know that the listeners that we have are typically have started their companies, they're generating six figures, and they're wondering, how the hell do I become part of that 1%, those unicorns that seem to be able to get it past the seven-figure mark? Because we know statistically, the odds are against us when we start our company. So could you kind of share what kind of drove you to start your own business and how you were able to initially fund it and get it off the ground and then get it to where it is today?
So I just, like, what are the kids saying? Delulu is the new Salulu. I think I just had so much delusion. Like, I didn't know that the odds were stacked against me, first of all. I just had no idea. I never set out to be like, I'm going to be a seven-figure business owner. That was just not even in my realm of possibility. I just started. And I think the saying, go ugly early, has been just my motto since day one. I didn't know anything about business. I didn't know anything about the online business space. I was just like, oh, there's an issue in the world. There's a problem. And I have some tools to solve it. So I'm just going to start solving problems. And I'm not going to think about the long game. I'm just going to do what's right in front of me, one foot in front of the other. So I didn't really invest in anything upfront. My overhead was really, really low. I had seen some people that I knew in real life invest a ton of money into getting it just right. The beautiful website, all of the marketing, all of the branding, doing everything by the book. And I saw that blow up in people's faces. So I was a little scared away from that. And I'm like, I don't want to start investing big money until I start making money. That's how I got started. If I could do it all over again, would I do it differently? I think I would probably have a lot of more faith in myself and my potential. And so I would probably be more like risky with throwing cash down on myself because now I see myself as a very viable investment. The ROI on me is high. So I wouldn't have been as scared to invest. But that's really how I got started, is just doing, working with people one-on-one, providing a service, and focusing on getting so good at my craft. I didn't think so much about the marketing and the messaging. I was like, I just want to be really good. And if I can get really good, then chances are other people are going to tell their family and friends that I helped them. And that is how everything snowballed, was me just really focusing on getting so good at what I do.
It's so true. I call them the false starts. And it's the people that have this amazing idea. Because here's the thing. A lot of people have a really great idea. A business model is pretty easy to follow. It's the entrepreneur that goes and screws it up. And so they've got this mindset starting out that everything has to be perfect. The website, the copy, the marketing, they're dumping all of this money into it. And yet, had they have just started and really figured out, done the research, started doing what they were going to do as far as service-based or testing their product, they would be so much further ahead. So I'm glad that you share that, because I find that 99% of the successful founders that I've talked to or that I work with are like, I had no idea what I was doing, but I just figured it out. And I was willing to take a risk financially from the perspective of not making a lot of money for those first couple years and putting everything back into the company. You had this idea, you had this vision, you're like, I'm going for it, I'm going to do it, I'm going to be really great at what I do. How long did it take for you to personally make money and pay yourself out of the business? Because I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding about entrepreneurship, and it looks so glamorous from social media, but we know that's not the case in the first couple of years.
I'm like nervous to tell you the honest truth because I don't want to frighten people and scare them away from entrepreneurship. I've been talking to my close friends about this because it's funny. We just bought a second home. And so from the outside looking in, it's like, wow, Aaron's killing it. I was like, Aaron didn't collect a paycheck for so many years. Like, Aaron's just building up her 401k now, you know, or like my retirement plan now, because every red cent that we earned went back into the company. What that looked like for me was back into my continuing education. The work that I do, I'm in the health world. So it's really important that I'm continuing to invest in my continuing education and learning so I can help people at a greater capacity. I also train and teach other clinicians. So me knowing what I'm talking about is kind of a big deal. So I kept putting money back into myself, back into my own education. And it took a long time for me to be profitable. I also had a couple like bumps in the road. I had a baby. So a lot of this I was doing as a full-time stay-at-home mom. I got really sick. So I was navigating chronic illness through a lot of it too. So it wasn't a smooth sailing event, but it took me, I would say, to start making like six figures and more, that took over 8 years for me.
Which is the standard. So I know you said, you know, I don't want to scare anyone away from entrepreneurship, but it's kind of good, right? Because this is not for everybody. And if you can't mentally handle that, the capacity of, I may not make as much money as everybody's showing online, or I need to be willing to reinvest into the company, into my personal growth, into the evolution in order to become a seven-figure founder. If that scares you, don't do this. This is not for you. Take that salaried position. We need those really talented salaried employees in order to help our companies grow. And so if you can't really come to terms with that, and I love the when founders share, it took me 8 years. But that 8 years of putting money back into the company and being very strategic then was able to be the catalyst for what now allows me to buy a second home or a vacation home.
I think like understanding, like tenacity is kind of the name of the game. This is really what I've seen, what I've learned, where it's kind of like what separates out a real entrepreneur, that like real true entrepreneurial spirit versus somebody who's like may actually be more comfortable and safer and just better suited for more of a salary position and not being solely responsible for every red cent that comes in the door. It's that tenacity piece. There was no plan B for me. There was no other option. There was no second choice. It was this or this. That was it. I saw literally no other way. So there was always going to be a way that I was going to make it work. Even if I wasn't making money, I would still be doing the same exact thing. And I know it's a little cheesy to talk about your why, but if you don't have a drive, if you don't have a passion for what you're doing, it's really, really, really hard to keep going because you will get knocked down. You will get taken out. You will get sideswept. One of my first business coaches joked that entrepreneurship is like getting punched in the face every single day and then having to get back up. And it's like, it's not untrue. He wasn't wrong. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's not just getting punched in the face and getting back up. It's then shaking hands and like doing deals with the person that punched you in the face. It's this two-sided sword, but it has some really great upsides. So one of the things that you just mentioned, which I think is so important for listeners, both male and female, I mean, we definitely see it more in the female sector, but a lot of people seem to think it's easier for them. Those people that got to seven figures, they had a different upbringing, or they don't have health issues, or they're not a mom, or they don't have children that they have to take care of, or they didn't have these things happen in their life that's happening for me. And I'm like, nope, definitely not true. We are all getting hit by those waves. It's never going to go away. And the most successful people I do know are the ones that have gone through the most. So talk about how you navigated growing your business while having children, while having health issues and everything I'm sure that happened in between those huge milestones. And how do you stay focused and keep your head in the game and bounce back and have that resilience to be able to say, I'm not giving up. I may have to pause or I may have to modify what me as the business owner looks like right now. But how were you able to navigate that and come out on the other side?
Yeah, it's easier for her because, or it's easier for them because, is such a way to take yourself out of the game before the game even begins. So always catch that. If you hear yourself saying that internally, always catch that and do something to interrupt that narrative because it's so crucial. And of course, privilege exists. We would be fools to not acknowledge that. But most of the people that you see, they had to overcome a lot in order to get to where they are. It is easy for me to say all of this stuff now because I've been practicing it and I've been working at it for 13 years. It's hard until it's easy. So you could choose the hard over and over and over again and eventually gets easy. Or you could just pull yourself right out of the game by saying, well, I'm never going to be like that. So why even bother? I think through my health challenges. So I had my daughter 9 years ago. And pretty much immediately after that, I started getting really sick. I went to a lot of different doctors. Nobody could explain what was going on. They kept telling me that everything is normal. It's just kind of like the allegory of like the modern American woman in healthcare. You're normal. It's fine. Labs are fine. It's just part of being a mom. We're really kind of culturally okay with mom suffering. So a mom coming saying, hey, I'm suffering. They're like, yep, that's the usual. Like, get on out of here. I'll write you a script for anti-anxiety. That's about all I can do. And so I had no choice but to figure my health situation out on my own. I did end up getting diagnosed with an autoimmune condition. And even that, autoimmunity in conventional healthcare is like a big question mark. So that actually, funnily enough, grew my career, blossomed my career, because that's what pivoted me over into the functional medicine side of things. I had gone to school for dietetics and nutrition, and this opened up my eyes to something entirely different because I had to self-source my own answers. I had to figure out why my body was doing what it was doing. And so I was not alone. I quickly realized there were a lot of other women dealing with the same exact thing, just being unheard and almost like gaslit by their healthcare professionals. And so I started adopting some different modalities with my own health with really good success. And then I started implementing that with my clients. And there was such a dramatic need for it at the time, especially like 9 years ago when the functional model wasn't what it is today. That really accelerated the pace of my private practice. So many people that needed help that I kind of maxed myself out. So I started opening up group programs. I started scaling just out of necessity. And that was really the driver and the motivation to keep going. I'm very motivated by my anger, quite frankly. Like, my anger is catalytic. So if I'm pissed about something, if I'm like, this is not fair, this is unjust, this is not okay, that kind of keeps me going. And so the more women I worked with who had similar stories, that was more grist for the mill to say, I have to find solutions for these people. And if it can't be me, then if it can't just be me, then I have to open up to more group programs. And then from there, I started training other clinicians within the same methodologies. And so that was really my driver. And it was easy for me to keep going because I believed so much in the mission that even if I wasn't feeling great, having that mission to keep me going was really, really helpful for me mentally and emotionally. So in some ways, like, growing my business actually helped me heal my body because it gave me something to focus on other than like how horribly I was feeling, which is maybe a little counterintuitive, but kind of my story.
It's true. And I speak with a lot of founders that say, you know, when I hit a very tough time in my life, could be divorce, could be a loss of a family member, it was the catalyst of my growth because I realized that that was the area I was so passionate about. And when most people would pull back from a job or a career, I leaned in because I love it so much. And I can instantly see the results and the impact that I have with my clients or our customers or for you, your patients. So in the nutritional space, I really do consider you somebody that is a trailblazer. I mean, we have to think about now, we have all of the NDs, the online, it's all over Instagram. But 9 years ago, this was not a well-known thing. And this was something that was a little bit more of a difficult sale to get in front of people because they had been conditioned for so long in traditional healthcare. as you look back and you think about how far it's come and your role that you played in that, being at the forefront of this, you had a huge advantage in that there was no game of follow the leader. You were the leader. And I'm curious as to, in that time frame, you probably didn't realize you were the leader. So you were having to create a lot of this on your own and build a business off of something that's never been done. What are some of the key decisions you made early on that have contributed most to the company's success?
That's a really good question. I don't even know. I think I am a bit too humble to even accept what you just said about me being a leader. I was like, oh, I feel dizzy. I can't accept that. But I am a leader in that I'm always doing something different. I've come to realize one of my like secret sauces is pattern assessment. So my audience is very large right now. It wasn't always that way. So I would just continue to talk to people and hear where people were struggling, really, 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 really listen to what people were saying. And what's the pattern here? What's the theme? I'm going to try to solve for that. So I've always been able to kind of stay at the front wave because I'm listening, and I'm listening for the words that people are not saying as well. Where are people suffering, but they can't really articulate exactly how they're suffering? I'm going to solve for that. And that has always been able to keep me kind of at the forefront of whatever the next wave is kind of coming in. Since I was little, I do not like to do what other people are doing. You know, it's like once the indie band starts getting popular, I'm like, oh man, you know, like, I just have always sort of wanted to beat to my own drum a little bit. And so I think that kind of gives me an advantage, because once somebody else is doing what I'm doing, I'm like, oh, I'm on something else already. I'm a couple steps ahead just by my own nature. And I think that that kind of gave me an advantage, because people started looking at me and saying, oh, she's saying something different. She's doing something a little bit differently. I think that's how my podcast audience started to grow, is because the way that I connect things is a little bit different than the average person. So I do think that that kind of gave me perhaps a leg up with other folks doing what I'm doing. I don't know if that answered your question directly.
Yeah. So this tees it kind of nicely into risk management and financial decision making. So as you are the leader, which I'm going to keep calling you the leader, whether you want to own it or not, you are. As the leader in your space, and now you do have this huge audience and you have a team and your programs are growing and they're scaling and there's more offers and we have more customers, patients, clients going through these programs, how do you as the founder and CEO sit down and decide what are risks we're willing to take? What are some of the things we're not willing to do in our market or our space? How do you determine whether or not you're going to invest in something financially or if it's not really worth your time? How do you gauge ROI? So in your role as the CEO, but also the face of the brand, I mean, people know, like, and trust you. When you sit down and you have to go through these hard decisions and forecasts with your team, what are some of the things that you're taking into consideration from a risk standpoint and a financial investment standpoint?
So one thing that I've always wanted to do in terms of investment is invest in my team, in talent. And so pretty much every hire, it's always been kind of like a vibe check. Like, does it feel good to me? I mean, that's really my entire business is like vibe checks. But I do really want to invest in talent in my own team. I really hold myself to a very, very, very high standard. And so I expect people in my vicinity to do the same. And the reason for that is because we are dealing with people who are suffering. We are dealing with every single dollar sign represents a beating heart. And that is not something that I take lightly. And if one heart is dropped in my company, that is one too many. And so I want everybody to really embrace and own that. Like, we've got you. I want you to know that if you're not interfacing with me in my company, you're going to get the same level of respect with everybody else in my company. We've got you. And so that's important to me, that that is a very worthy investment, is investing in talent within my team. This year, this is a great time to ask me this question, because I've never invested in any marketing or paid ads. It's all been me. It's been me on Instagram and on the podcast and in person. That's it. And so I've been able to surpass 7 figures just doing that. And the last half of 2023, so we're recording February 2024, the last half of 2023 was really, really hard for me. Around July, I had like what I refer to as like a mini breakdown, not like a full-blown breakdown, but I was like crying on our back deck to my husband. And I'm like, this isn't fun for me anymore. I don't like this. I want out. And so that was scary because in all the years of business, I've never felt that way. Never have I felt that way. So I had to take a really long look at what I was doing. And I was doing a lot. I was the CEO. I was the CVO. I was the CMO. I was all the O's. It was me. Or all the C's, I guess. And I had to look at where can I do less? I've heard somebody said, we don't start businesses to do shit we hate. And I was doing a lot of shit that I hated. And I had to kind of make a list and get really honest with myself. What do I no longer enjoy? I was still creating all of my social media content. So like I was like in Canva on a Monday morning, cobbling together Instagram posts, like with tears trickling down my face because I had 28 other things that I had to be doing. And so where it felt really good to me to receive support was around social media and around marketing. And so that is what I'm investing in right now. So, and I never have before. And it's like a significant investment in terms of like bringing in marketing support and bringing in social media support and social media manager and strategy and all of that. But it feels so good because it feels good. For me, investments are always about a gut check. Does it feel good in my body when I think about it? I have kind of my own discernment, my own internal compass for my sacred yes and my sacred no. And so I tend to make investments less so on like spreadsheets with like dollar figures and more so on like, does this feel good? I also have kind of an attitude of F it up and see what happens. Like everything's an experiment to me. We might try something and it's a bust. Okay, we just won't do that thing again. No big deal. We'll try something and it's great. Awesome. Let's keep doing it. And so I try to take some of the pressure off. Now that there's more money coming in, it's like, this is easier for me to say because I have more cash to play with within the business. So I can make more investments. I can do these things with a little bit more freedom. But that's kind of how I look at investments is it going to feel good?
And it's going to be a game changer for you. I mean, I always hone in on profitability and we talk a lot about profitability on this podcast just because I always say revenue is a participation trophy. You get it for showing up. I mean, you could do 7 figures in revenue, but your business could be costing you 8. But one of the things that we work strongly with founders on is, and the threshold kind of moves, but for someone like you, I would say, could you be paying somebody less than $100 an hour to do this task? If the answer is yes, that task should not be on your plate. For some of our founders, it's a $200, $250 threshold. But at the end of the day, when you add up all of those hours and the average revenue you could be bringing in to the business and you see it laid out in front of you, you're like, not only do I hate doing this and it's exhausting and it's causing me tears, but it's also not the best decision for the company or the growth or the portfolio as a whole. And so I'm excited to hear that you made that investment to get it off of your plate. And I also think too, even with like how you said, sometimes we try things and if it works, great. If it doesn't, you still get information from the things that don't work. And I think the smartest entrepreneurs take the failures or they're willing to burn things to the ground. I always talk about in corporate, sometimes there were $3 to $5 million projects and $5 million in, we would look at it and say, this isn't going to work. What we thought there was a market for, there might not be. Let's burn it to the ground. Let's just call it a day. Like, don't keep going until you're at $10 million to try to fit a square peg into a round hole. It's like ridiculous. So I would say that as you head into 2024, what are some of the things that you are most looking forward to now that you're able to free up this time and truly step into the visionary, the CEO? And what are the next steps for the company?
So great question. Still figuring that out right now. My personal goal for myself, because we did 2023, we had a good year. And so I'm like, if I could just repeat that, maybe not go for growth on the revenue and profitability side of things this year, just like if I can just maintain, by the way, the first time I've ever said this, because I'm like, growth, growth, always growth. I can just maintain that, but enjoy my life more. Oh my gosh, that is a game changer. That is a win for me. So I think that it's like sort of shifting my perspective, like rather growth for the sake of growth. It's like we've been in a growth period for a very long time. Like, can I get into like and enjoy the growth that I've created period for myself? I think that my husband would really appreciate that too. And so that's kind of personal goals. And I'm saying that because again, brand new to me, have never said that before. In terms of the company, we're trying to just, we were really systematizing things the second half of last year and focusing on metrics and systems. And I was doing that. I think some of that was necessity, but some of that is like everybody told me that's what I had to do at this stage in the game. And in doing that, I kind of pulled a lot of the heart out. In this business, it is built on heart, nothing but heart. And so I feel like I was like just left of my, like I couldn't find my North Star. I was like, where is it? That drive, that mission, that why that I was talking about at the start of this, I lost that for a little bit. It doesn't mean I was doing anything out of integrity or doing anything weird or flaky or shaky. I just like couldn't find my compass. And I think part of it is because I was letting the systems and the metrics and what we should be doing according to somebody else's template, according to somebody else's framework, I was letting that lead instead of saying, this is what's on my heart to create. Therefore, this is what will be created. So I'm taking that back, and that's already like changed. Like I've enjoyed January. We've had 1 month of 2024. I've enjoyed that month more so than any month in the second half of 2023 because I'm doing stuff that lights me up. I'm doing stuff that I enjoy. I don't really care what the system tells me I should do. I'm going to do what makes me happy, which is why I started this in the first place. So I feel like this year is a little bit of like returning to my roots, and I'll be so curious to see how that impacts or changes or doesn't change the numbers, the revenue and the profitability.
I've been doing this long enough and worked with enough founders. I'm going to tell you that this year, when you say it's going to be maintain year and allow you to pull back as the founder, the company is going to have massive growth for so many different reasons. And for those listening, the reason this happens is when you are a true entrepreneur, a CEO, and you're incredibly passionate about what you do, there's a lot of bad information out there. And I will call a spade, it is awful. It is generic. It's that if you apply this methodology to your business, it's going to succeed. That's just not the case. There's so many different pieces that build a business model. And the key and the center point of that is the entrepreneur, the founder, and the CEO, the personality, how they operate, how they function, who their consumer is. And when you get to a place where you can step back, your vision is going to run wild. You're going to think of new ideas. You are going to have the space, the time, the freedom to not be thinking about metrics and systems and processes and all the things. And instead, you're going to be thinking about what feels so good right now and what's giving me so much life and energy, and how can I then pass this on to my team, my consumers, the product suites that we have. And oftentimes, I truly believe business owners are holding their businesses with like a death grip, and that is what is keeping them from growing. It also, you'll never be able to sell your company. You will never be able to name another CEO or truly have a hands-off. You'll be owner-dependent the rest of your life. And we know that if we are that immersed in our companies, that there is no break. There is no downtime. There is no time to do the things that we truly love and enjoy. So I'm excited to see what this year has in store for you. I know through you mentor so many different practitioners and nutritionists how to build profitable practices. And one of the things that you touch base on that I love so much is, yes, it's numbers. Yes, it's data, but it's also the mindset. And so can you kind of just walk us through, when you look back at the past 9 years of building a company, what are some of the mindset shifts that you've either had to make, or what are some of the beliefs that you have that have been the catalyst to success because you thought, this is the mindset I have to have, whether the days were good, they were hard, they were ugly, they were easy, they were profitable, not profitable. What are some of those core mindset shifts that you truly think are the thing that successful entrepreneurs have versus those that don't? Because you're like me, we've put people through programs, some of them skyrocket, some of them build really successful practices, and then others don't. And they have the same tools, same resources, but I truly think it comes down to the mindset.
I am not somebody who makes excuses for myself, period. I am like, if there's a problem in front of me, I'm like, my mind goes to, okay, how am I going to solve for that? If there's an obstacle in front of me, I'm like, how am I going to move that out of my way? I do not make excuses or reasons for myself. That's like the tenacity piece, I think. And that's something that not everybody has. I am also like always a student. I go into every situation being like, what can I learn? I mean, just listening to you, I was like, can I take notes? Like, do you mind if I take some quick notes? That was like medicine to receive. So I'm going into every situation thinking like, what can I learn from this? you know, not like in a weird networky, like grabby way, but just like, okay, what could I receive from this? What could I learn? How could I expand what I know to be true in this scenario? I never say, I already know this. That's like not something that I have on the table. I've worked with so many different business owners, like, oh, I already know this. That's another statement that's going to take yourself right out of the game before the game even begins. I'm always like, okay, what more is there to learn? So I think that really, really serves me well. In terms of mindset shifts, capability was a big one for me, seeing myself as capable. And I think that that's probably more like my own personal story and beliefs that I had to kind of unpack based on my own experiences throughout childhood. But it was hard for me to see myself as capable. And that really needed to change in order to really grow my business. So there was like a lot of like inner work that had to kind of be unpacked for that. But and then truly, 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 I think the first biggest investment I made in myself was around the $20,000 price point. And that was like crazy at that time. Like, who am I to do this? My husband was like, what? And it was between a continuing education program and also some business coaching. So combined, it was $20,000. And that did something to me. That like unlocked the keys to the kingdom for me because it tapped me into something that I didn't even know was possible. And I think sometimes like business coaches can kind of weaponize this idea that like, oh, people aren't investing in you because you're not investing in yourself. So sign up with me and, you know, like that's going to solve all your problems. That's not what I'm saying here. But if there was something about I'm going to do this. And because I'm willing to like kind of put a little bit of risk into this, I know myself enough to know that there's going to be great reward on the other side. And I set the belief in the intention that I'm going to make my money back before this program even ends. And so now every single time I invest in myself, I'm like, I'm going to 2x this ROI. I'm going to 3x this, or I'm going to 2x this investment. I'm going to 3x this. I like play a little game with myself where I set a belief and intention that like, I'm actually going to get something major out of this. And because I set the belief and the intention, that is what happens. And so I think that's another little like secret, you know, that I would share with like what's kind of separates the people who are successful from the people who are not. Like, we believe in ourselves.
I agree. And I want you to up your 2x, 3x. Come on, we need to like 8x, 9x, you can do 10x. Your investments, because I think it's true, right? And I've always gone into, and I'm somebody, I mean, they could be personal wealth, they could be business investments, whatever it may be. And I've always gone into it with, I trust myself that I can make this money back. Whether it's from the advice, the experience, whatever I'm investing in, if even if that were to fail, even if that $20,000 investment fails, I know I can go out and make another 20 grand and pay that back. And I will learn something. Even if it's not what I had hoped, I will learn something. I'll extract information out of this investment. The reason I think, and I want to lean into this, what you said is it changed me, is because if you don't take yourself seriously, no one else will. And I think all of us who are business owners, even if you're not a business owner and you look back at who you were 10 years or 20 years ago, life happens. You've evolved. You've learned lessons, whether it's the hard way, whether through continuing education, bad experiences, good experience. If you are willing to make investments, and it could look completely different depending what type of markets or industries you're in, what you're saying is, I'm where I'm at today, but I want to be where I could be in 10 years by next year. And it does. It completely expedites the process. And there is something to be said about those. I mean, even the nutritionists or the people that sign up to be in your academy, what they're saying is not necessarily, if I invest X, I hope I, you know, get 2X back. Where the real value is I could spend the next 5 to 10 years figuring this out on my own, or I could hand somebody the money that's going to show me exactly how to do it. They're going to expedite the process, which is going to allow me to make money quicker, which is going to allow me to impact more lives through my practice. I'm going to be able to grow and scale, have this network, have a rock star like Aaron teach me how to do this. And that's priceless. People are so worried about what they're spending versus what they're saving. And when you can invest into a mindset program, therapy, I mean, whatever it is, I always focus on how much I am saving by getting this information quicker and getting to well faster, getting to smarter, quicker, whatever that may look like. based off of your investment. And so I just think it's important that if you're a business owner, you are continually evolving because the company will stop where you stop. And I think a lot of people are able to win once in life. They can get to that seven-figure mark. They can do 1.5 million. And they're like, I don't know what happened. I've been doing the same thing and I'm at the same place for the last 5 years. And I instantly go, how have you changed in the last 5 years? How have you evolved and what have you invested in? Because if you want to get to 5 million or 10 million, that's going to take a whole different person that got you than who you were to get to a million. And you're going to have a whole different roster to get you there. And so I think that's important that you share, you know, it was that one super scary investment that really just flipped the script.
And it's a question that I often ask myself is, what would the $5 million CEO do right now? What would the $10 million CEO do right now? What decision would she make? We talk so much about inner child healing and we need to do that. I don't think we think enough about like supporting our future selves. And obviously this is like very esoteric, like quantum field type of stuff, but she's waiting for us to make some good decisions right now. She's waiting for us to bet on ourselves right now. And sometimes I'm like, is this decision going to make a mess that my future self is going to have to clean up? Is this decision going to make my future self proud? And sometimes I'll do that if I'm kind of stuck in like, should I, shouldn't I? And now I love investing. Like it feels fun for me. It feels exciting for me. It feels expansive for me. It feels like it's going to unlock my next steps. And so it's more of a fun game now. There was also something else that you said that really made me think about this when you were like, even if I don't make my money back, there's another way to make money or there's another way to make this investment back. That is a big belief of mine too. There's always more ways to make money. There's always a way to make money. Even when I was starting my private practice, I was also teaching yoga. I was nannying sometimes. I was making mala beads and selling mala necklaces. I'm like, I'm going to do this. Come hell or high water, I'm going to do this. So there's always a way to make money. It's just about being creative. And now part, I think, why my company does really well and why I'm not really super grippy and hyper fixated on any one offer we have is because we have so many offers. We have so many revenue streams. There's always ways for money to flow in. And so I think that's another really potent belief for entrepreneurs and business owners to adopt is there's always another way to make money.
Yes. And the diversification. I mean, just, and that kind of leans into, I tell people all the time, all you need is one strong business to then catapult your personal wealth into being able to invest in different ventures, different opportunities, start another company. But you can have all, your business could be generating millions upon millions of dollars. If it is dependent on you, you are not going to have the time to even be able to think about what is next. What else could I be doing? And to be honest, your team wants you to be looking into other things and diversifying and partnerships and collaborations and product-based businesses based off of your audience. It's endless. So it's like once you start to really build that momentum, you do need to step back. And I'm so glad that 2024 is this year for you where you step back and you say, I have such a bigger impact to make. I've built the right team that's able to handle this. I can be involved a little bit, but what is next for this business and for anything else that I'm going to put my hands on that's going to turn into gold?
Wait, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Pause there because now okay. I have a question for you. And I'm curious if this has come up. So one of my core, I would say at this point, limiting beliefs. I think it used to not be a limiting belief. It used to be like a power belief. But one of my core beliefs is that my value is in being the hardest. And I found that created a lot of conflict and rub within my team because I felt a sense of guilt, shame, and like lack of value when I was starting to hire my team and people were working. And I was like, well, if they're working that hard, I have to work harder or else there goes my value in this company. And I'm curious, is this just a me thing or have you seen this with other business owners and entrepreneurs?
No, it's extremely common. But then I always challenge people to think about you're playing in a small arena. Step out and let's look at the big dogs. So let's look at the Sarah Blakely's, the Bethany Frank, like whoever you want to look at when you think of household names. Think about what their CEOs are doing and their founders. Especially once it's off the ground and running. They are traveling. They are doing humanitarian efforts. They are investing. They are going on podcasts. They are going on Oprah Winfrey. They're being interviewed. They are taking what they have and what they know, and they are expanding upon it in ways that we could only dream to have an impact. And so if you are so focused in being the doer and the busy bee, you're actually giving your team two different messages. One, I don't trust that you actually know how to do this and everything has to be done my way. So I'm going to have to be in here every single day making sure it gets done. Or two, I've built a business that cannot operate without me. And so if anything happens to me, not only is the business screwed, but all of you are going to be screwed because I'm not here to run it every day. Where if you reframe it and you flip the script and you say, I have an incredible leadership team. I have the most awesome employees that are smarter than me. They are quicker than me. They are up to date on all of the technology. And I don't have to be in the day to day. I can come in and I can really be the strategic thinker and the visionary. And I am so appreciative of all of you. And I want to have incentive comp plans. And I want to really build a strong culture so that all of you really do feel like you have skin in the game in the growth of this business. I'm telling you, that's going to be way more well received than the CEO that's emailing her team at 11:30 at night and 4 in the morning and Saturday and Sunday and asking for this.
Okay, take me to church, Jessica Marks. I'm hearing you. It's landing. This makes a lot of sense. It's a really good reframe.
Set the example and the conversation where we pull a lot of owners out of their company. And it is. It's uncomfortable. It's releasing control. And the best analogy I can give it is you wouldn't want to spend 18 years raising your kids, giving them all this information, how to be successful at life, morals, values, work ethic, and then say, but you're never leaving this house. You're staying here. You can't get a job. You can't go to college. And I'm just going to basically keep paying you the rest of your life because I don't want you to use all the skills I've just taught you. And so I challenge them to really think about when you step out and your team doesn't need to know you're on vacations. They don't need to know what you're buying, what you're doing, all of that. But they do need to hear, I trust that you have this handled. This is why I hired you. I believe in you. If there comes a point where you don't think you have it handled or what is the escalation process, we'll talk about that. But you've got this and we can fix just about anything that you mess up.
Yeah, I love that.
This is the year where Aaron is at it's at the lake house.
Right.
The phone is off. The team is thriving.
It's the year. I love it. Love that for me.
Okay. So before we go, I would love for you to give, you know, 1 to 3 pieces of advice that you would give yourself if you were going back to the start of this business and you could say, here's a picture of you in 10 years. Here's the vision. Here's what you have. Here's what you've achieved. Here's 3 things that I would tell you so you could get there quicker or effortlessly or some lessons you're going to learn. What would you say?
Despite having said what I just said, I really like where I am today. I think there could be some refinements and stuff, obviously, but I think that I would say continue to make sure you're prioritizing your body over business, because I've never done business at the expense of my health or sacrificing my body. And that is something that I see a lot of other people not upholding with catastrophic results. So I would say good job there. I would also say continue to follow your gut. Your gut has never steered you wrong. Keep on with that. And the third thing that I would say and what I would do differently is just have a lot more self-trust. Like, it is all going to work out way better than you ever thought. So stop gripping on so tightly to the ways that you think it has to be and allow for something even better to unfold.
I love that. Where can our listeners follow you, find you, learn about your programs? Because I do know that we have a lot of practitioners that follow us, and I want to make sure that they are following you as well.
Okay. So I am on Instagram. I'm The Functional Nutritionist, and my podcast is called The Functional Nutrition Podcast. That's more health related, but I do mix in some entrepreneurship stuff from time to time. And then for my practitioners listening, if you are interested in learning more functional medicine methodologies, that's the Functional Nutrition Academy. It's a 14-month training program and mentorship.
Amazing. And we will link all of this in the show notes as well.
Awesome.
Thank you, Aaron.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Have a great weekend, Aaron.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for joining me today, and I hope you gained as much inspiration from this episode as I did. If you loved what you heard, don't forget to subscribe for more insider tips and leave a review to tell me your takeaways from this episode.